We're continuing the Ein Yaakov. We're on page Chaf Gimel in the Talmud, which is page Tes in the standard editions of the Ein Yaakov, of the Tractate Shabbos. Amar Rav Huna taught, Haragil b'ner. He who is accustomed to lighting a lamp, and here some interpret it's referring to Hanukkah, others refer it to the laws of Shabbos, and we take it for both. We say that he meant both. Havinei banim talmidei chachamim. That's meritorious for having children who will be talmidei chachamim, who will be learned in Torah. Now, why did he tell us this? So when the Shulchan Aruch quotes these things, like these things where the Talmud says something's meritorious, the Shulchan Aruch understands it to mean that it's a warning, be careful about this, because it carries weight. So the Talmud said, he who's careful will merit this, in order to tell me, you should know that it's worth investing your time in it. It's something you should be more careful about. It's coming to tell you an extra level of care that we should invest in this mitzvah. Sometimes a person thinks, what difference does it make if I have more light or less light on Shabbos? No, it's something you should take time for. Now, in our day and age, where we apply that is having lights on in your house on Shabbos. That's our Shabbos candles. We bless the candles. But in fact, the idea of having light on so that you can manage on Shabbos, that's light. So that's light in the bathroom, that's light in the living room, that's light maybe if you have a den where the kids like to play and read. And that's what it's talking about, having light where you'll need it. Yes?
Well, also specifically says something in something in. So it would go to follow that if there's light on Shabbat, people can spend their time studying on Shabbat.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah.
Was it common before electricity for people to save money by leaving their house completely dark at night?
Yeah, it was very expensive to light candles. We had in Kochav Yaakov blackouts. So this winter we had on average one Shabbos a month without electricity. That was we had three or four blackouts. Almost every month we had at least one Shabbos without electricity. So we bought emergency lights so that when the lights go out, when the electric goes out, I got 12 hours of light from the emergency light that turns on right away. We put one in the bathroom and one in the living room so that the bathroom, so the kids don't get scared when they go to the bathroom. The living room so that we can have the Shabbos meal. And then we had the snowstorm where we had 2 to 3 days without electric and we had no way of knowing when it would be coming back. And that led into Shabbos. So I took our candlesticks and I put them in the kitchen because it dawned on me that the place where you really need light to see what you're doing is the kitchen. We had a certain amount of light in the living room, but it was much more necessary that we'd ensure that there was light at night in the kitchen. So it just dawned on me because we ordinarily, we think of Shabbos candles by the living room table where you're having the meal. But the truth is that wherever you're going to need the light, Chazal wanted you to ensure you'll have light. So if you're living in a place where it's very rare that you have blackouts, so then fine, you know, you just leave on whatever lights you need. But I think that in a place like Kochav Yaakov, where it's fairly common that we have blackouts, and this was the case last year as well, so then I think the correct thing in honor of Shabbos is that a person should buy these emergency lights. If it's happening during the winter once a month, that's a very high frequency. And if you have emergency lights, then you've ensured you have light for Shabbos. Hazahir b'mzuzah. Now beforehand we said haragil, he who is accustomed. Now we say hazahir, he who is careful with having a proper mezuzah on his doorpost, zoche ledira na'ah, will merit to have a nice apartment, a nice place to live. Hazahir b'tzitzit, he who takes care to wear tzitzit that are kosher the way he should be, so then zoche letalit na'ah, he will merit to have nice clothing. Hazahir b'kiddush hayom, he who's careful in kiddush by day, the sanctifying of Shabbos by making kiddush, zochel mimalega ve'yayim, he will merit to fill many different vessels of wine. Rav Huna avaragil davachalif etanya pitcha de Rabbi Avin Nagra. Rav Huna was accustomed to pass back and forth. He'd often pass by the entrance of Rabbi Avin Nagra. Nagra means the one who would nagar, like a modern Hebrew, what's a nagar?
Carpenter.
A carpenter. So nagra means one who works with wood. Chazi davragil b'shal gatuva. He saw that on Shabbos he would light many candles. He would leave a lot of light in his house in honor of Shabbos. Amal, so he declared, Tre gavre ravre ve nafke mehacha. Two big people will come out of here. Nafike minayu, Ravi dibravin, Ravchir baravin. So Rabbi Avin, in fact, had two children who were big Tamid Chachamim. We encounter them in Shas. Rabbi Idi, the son of Avin, and Rabbi Chia, the son of Avin. Now, by the way, Rabbi Avin is also Ravin. When you encounter in Shas Ravin, it's just a contraction. It's shortening Rabbi Avin to Ravin. Rav Chista. Now, who was Rav Chista? He was a Kohen. He was the father-in-law of Rava. Right? Rava married his daughter. Rav Chista haveragil davechalif etana pitcha debeinasha de Rav Shizvei. Rav Chista used to pass back and forth. He'd frequently pass by the father or father-in-law of Rav Shizvei. Chaza davragil b'shalvei tuva. He saw that we would light a lot of candles, a lot of lamps in honor of Shabbos. He said, a big person will come out of this house. If they light a lot of light in honor of Shabbos, a big person will come out of there. Nafik minayu Rav Shizvei. So he merited to have Rav Shizvei. Now that's interesting. Either he had Rav Shizvei as his son or his son-in-law. You see here that that's considered that someone merited to have that child, even if it's their son-in-law. Debitu Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef was blind, what we call in Hebrew saginahor, who has much light. It's a nice way of saying he was visually handicapped. Have me'acha umadlikatla. She used to light her Shabbos candles late, very close to Shabbos. Now, what we see throughout the Shas is that Rav Yosef not only memorized tremendous volumes of the oral law, and that's why he became the chief rabbi, but he also had a very firm grasp on what was going on around him. Very often you see that he had a better understanding of what's going on in society than the people who could see. You see this in many places in Shas. Amala Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef says to his wife, Tanina, I learned on the Pasuk, Lo yamish amud ha'anan yomam v'amud ha'esh laila. The Torah describes that when God sent us a pillar of cloud to lead us in the desert, and then the pillar of fire, so then they both didn't waver from leading the people of Israel. So why is it described as they didn't waver? To teach me, melamed, it's coming to teach me, shamud anan mashlim lamud esh, that the pillar of cloud would fill in the gaps for the pillar of fire. Vamud esh mashlim lamud anan, and the pillar of fire would overlap the pillar of cloud. Meaning it wasn't that one pillar disappeared and another one came down. There was an overlap. So by the same token, don't wait till it's really dark to light the candles. Don't wait till it's nighttime. There should be an overlap. Light the candles early enough while there's still light. Just like God, when he was leading us in the desert, ensured there'd be an overlap. The pillar of cloud came before the pillar of fire disappeared. The pillar of fire came before the pillar of cloud disappeared. Savalak duma. So she thought, okay, I'll light candles early, 3 hours before Shabbos. And my husband says there should be an overlap. Okay, no problem. Amar lahu saba. So that old grandpa told her, who's that old grandpa in the Shas? That's Eliyahu HaNavi. Tosfa says that in almost all the places where we encounter Ahu Saba, it's a code for Eliyahu who showed up to tell her. Must have been a pious woman.
Why are you calling code names? Yeah.
Maybe because to the layman, if we'd say it was Eliyahu, he'd have a hard time swallowing it. And maybe every...
Rabbi Akiva is also called the bald one.
So that's because the Romans were looking to kill his family.
But they were going to find him in the Gemara?
First of all, Romans had people learning the Gemara. And secondly, it wasn't only in the Gemara. In those days, everyone called his son Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha, and that was a way of hiding the fact that he was the son of Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, they had to reference him as whose son he was, as we find in Tractate Negoim and in Tractate Shavuos, that the Talmud will sometimes try to understand Rabbi Akiva's opinion based on his son's opinion. if we would ignore the fact that he was Rabbi Akiva's son, then we would also ignore the connection in the tradition. So it was important to maintain that understanding that his father was really Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, to do it in a way that they wouldn't realize it. You also have to remember that Mishnayos were constantly reviewed by the laymen as well. Up until 60 years ago, even the Yemenites who were sitting and smoking on Shabbos were sitting and smoking, reviewing Mishnayos. Everyone was, it's like the same thing, of course. What do you do Shabbos afternoon? You sit there and you chant Mishnayos. So everyone knew Mishnayos. And that's why they had to ensure that what was available to the masses would still conceal who Rabbi Akiva was. But that's different than here. It could also be that when we use different names for different people, we're referring to different aspects of their halachic strength or their halachic weight. Meaning when Eliyahu appears in certain contexts, he can have one weight. And over here, it could be it's stressing the point that he's not coming in as a halachic weight as much as an advisory board, as we'll see. Yes?
I was going to ask why Saba.
Oh. Sorry, I don't know. I don't remember Tosas answering that. No. No. Not everyone agrees that Ahu Saba means Eliyahu Anavi. Tosfos, one opinion in Tosfos says that. And even Tosfos has to admit that there are places where it doesn't work. But not every time it says Ahu Saba is Eliyahu. So what did he tell her? She wants to light early. Along comes that grandfather. He tells her, Tanina, I'll tell you my tradition. You can't do it too early. You can't do it too late. If you do it too early, so then no one recognizes you did it in honor of Shabbos. And here we see the idea that lighting Shabbos candles should be recognized as something you're doing in honor of Shabbos. Ordinarily, we would say, you have to have lights on. But what do you mean? I have lights on. No, you're supposed to light it in honor of Shabbos. That's why those halachic authorities that are of the opinion that the prime mitzvah we do today is by lighting our fluorescent, our light bulbs, they hold that when you bless on the lighting of Shabbos candles, right afterwards you should turn off and turn on all the lights around the house that you would want lit for Shabbos, or because you're doing it in honor of Shabbos. But we don't do that, right? I've never seen anyone do that. Amar Rava. Okay, Rava's going to teach us something interesting. We're speaking about amulets here. We're talking about things that are meritorious. Derachim Rabbanan. What does the word rachim mean? So rachum in Hebrew means merciful. Rachim in Aramaic means to love. He who loves people who are learned in Torah, havin le banim rabbanan, then he will have children who are learned. Because God says, you love those that learn Torah, so I'll give you the capacity to express that love in the most natural form with your own children. Demokir rabbanan, he who values people who are learned, he honors them, havin le chatnvata rabbanan, he will have sons-in-law that are learned. Because I guess that's how it plays itself out. Didachil mirabanan, if someone has awe of those who are learned, hu gufei avitzuba mirabanan, he himself will be one of the sharp students. So here we see that respect plays a role in being able to accept to learn. And there's a logic to that. Aristotle said that too. V'ilav bar hachi, and this is one of my favorite Rashis in the Shas, and if he can't do it, so then mishtamin midei ketzubam rabbanan, then at least people will listen to him as though he were one of the learned students. So what does it mean he can't do it, right? That's always the question. Is everyone cut out to learn? What does Rashi say? What does that mean he can't do it? Sheino ragil lasok b'torah. Rashi says he can't do it because he doesn't spend time learning Torah. He doesn't consistently, eino ragil, he's not in the habit of delving into Torah. Meaning Rashi's telling us, don't think you can't do it. If you can't do it, it's because you're not diligently investing the time. This is we would have read the Gemara as though the Gemara was saying, yeah, some people could and some people can't. And Rashi says, no. Now, obviously, Rashi has to admit some people don't have the IQ for it. Saying, you have people who can't understand that 6 times 5 is 30. Now, they're not going to be able to get too much Gemara, right? So, Rashi's talking about the average person. Yeah?
I mean, somebody, he's not for 13 years or something like that, and he says the same, but then nobody is born stupid. So, okay.
But some people are.
So, look, for me it's very hard to learn a language. I speak something, I don't know how. It takes me 1 year to stay here to speak something that somebody understands my English with a proper accent. So, it's very hard. Nobody knows how hard it is for me. It's easy. It's not easy. How is that for somebody?
Different people have different skills. That's for sure true. Some people have to work harder and some people have to work easier. I could tell you that I'm not one of the people who it's easy for. When I came to America as a Rav, no one wanted to learn with me for good reason. I couldn't keep up with the lowest chavrusa and the lowest shir. And it was so frustrating that I ended up learning Mishnayot. I didn't even learn Gemara for a half a year because I just couldn't keep up. I went into class, I couldn't follow what was going on. And part of it was the language, part of it was the chemistry. Throughout our history, there were a lot of people who did not have it easy. If a person is willing to dedicate himself to learning, then with time, he overcomes the obstacles. Part of it is also focus. Part of it is having a good teacher. A person can sometimes be barking up the wrong tree. And if a person has an impatient teacher, so then it's going to be very hard to get anywhere. You need someone who's going to have the patience to explain what's really going on. There are a lot of components, but if a person's willing to make the effort, so then the path is available. Torah munachat bekeren zavit. The sages say Torah is not like the priesthood, it's not like the kingship. Torah is there. Whoever wants to access it just has to work. There's no family heritage that you have to be born into this family to be learned into Torah. You have to be born into a family to be a Kohen. You have to be born into a family to be a king. You don't have to be born into the family to be the biggest leader of Israel and the biggest Talmud Chacham.
If you will, so Hashem give will to somebody,
no.
And he take the obstacle out that you are able to. If you don't have a good teacher, I mean, you must be. There are a few genius who 5 years old start to make math on the earth, so he doesn't know nothing. But I am not a genius, so.
Right, but we need to work and we have to search. I didn't have it easy. You have to search.